the Community Advisory Committee, October 29th, about to begin.
Is that you, Terry? Terry, can you hear us?
Everyone else. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
We're getting ready to start.
Okay, perfect. Well, Noelle's here.
Okay, thanks, Noelle.
Oh, you are. You
my name is Lonnie Miller.
How are you?
Kim Floyd.
Jeremy Chris.
Good to see you again.
I'm Devin. I was Cathedral City originally, and then I moved right before this started.
Good turnout tonight. I want to start off, if we wouldn't mind doing some introductions, just so we can all get to know each other a little bit better. We can start with me. I'm Benjamin Druyan. I'm the management analyst here, and I'll be running this committee.
Jane Garrows with CDAG and also staff for Desert Community.
Rosario Avila, Cathedral City resident, and I have public comments, just no form, so if you can ask for public comments.
Jeremy Roos, Chief Revenue Officer for Freevolt, Palm Desert resident.
Carl Baker, Director of Legal Affairs, Desert Age Project, Palm Springs.
Shelley Kaplan, Cathedral City, former City Council member.
John Goins, Palm Springs.
Peter Coy, I'm with Energy Vault, a storage company that's planning on building in Palm Springs a 500-foot renewable energy tower. Got a brochure here, if you'd like to pass that around and learn a little bit about it.
Elmer?
Oh, Elmer Diaz, Cathedral City.
Rita Lamb, Cathedral City Council.
Dan Paris. Palm Desert Advisory Committee.
David Friedman, Palm Springs, also serve along with a couple of those other folks on the Palm Springs Sustainability Committee. Dr. Miller, Mr. Baker, and Mr. Goins.
Paul Murphy, I'm on Park and Rec Commission in Palm Desert.
I'm Lonnie Miller, Palm Springs Sustainability Commission.
Kim Floyd, Palm Desert resident, and speak for the Sierra Club.
And on the phone, we have Terry Applegate and Noel Lohren.
Lohren.
Hi, Noel.
Oh, you're good, Jeremy. Yeah, Noel Lohren. Hi, everyone.
And hi, everyone. I'm Hector, Senior Implementation Manager with Live to Rise.
Cool. All right. Thank you, everybody. At this time, we'll do public comments.
Okay.
Rosario.
Hi, my name is Rosario Avila. So I basically have public comments on six A or 6B, D and E, C, D, E. I'll just go through them. So 6B, the Carib Farah and Enhanced enrollment program. So just to begin, last week's community advisory committee was canceled because it was not notified to the public, which was kind of a letdown for me because I've been following this topic for over 2 years and I'm ready to participate, but the public didn't know about last week's Friday's meeting, so that's why it is today. I would like to talk on 6B, the Care Fera Enhanced Enrollment Program. Just a reminder that on June 17th, the board, on their 6A item, had on their agenda to approve a proposal for Lift to Rise. A few of us spoke out that where was the request for proposals process? It didn't exist, so they took it back and they did a formal request for proposals. And so if you compare the agenda on June 17th to the actual minutes, you will see in the minutes that they had to go back and do a request for proposals. So that wasn't my first time catching a detail like that. Back in November of 2018, that's the topic. That's at least my second Brown Act violation. In November of 2018, the board went ahead. You compare the agenda to the minutes, and it doesn't match up. On the board agenda, it had that no formal board action is required, but at the end of the minutes on November 2018, it says it was moved by council member then Kaplan, seconded by Coors, to hire a director, a consultant, to do the survey of the DCE launch. Nobody followed up with me and nobody listened to me about that, so here we are. That was okay, I guess. And then, like I said, last week the meeting was not notified to the public. So between the Care Fera, the survey for DCE launch, and the public advisory committee, I'm finding it very, very difficult to just keep up in this public utility government that has been created. And so just a reminder that this is not private business. This is the work of the public, the public's money. So if you could please address that, make things easier for the public. Okay, so going back to the agenda, that was 6B, same 6C, the overview of DCA. Just a reminder that some people, you could say, to quote Kim Floyd, some people are generally against this concept. And how do you talk to those people? How do you bring those people in? I fear I've been labeled that way. Also, 6D, Desert Community Energy, the consultant team. What is the obligation to this board or to this advisory committee and the board to have those consultant teams come in? I would like to, maybe the public would like to. Sorry? Well, my question is, if there's so many topics, do I get 3 minutes per topic?
I'm just saying, if the
structure has to be... So just to end, for 6E, the outreach for the low-income customers... I'm just getting over my head now. So I'll just go ahead and stop there. And I do have public comments on non-agenda items, but that's at the end, correct?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
At this time, does the board have any comments or topics they want to discuss or bring up? Any workshops?
Yes, working very closely with Benjamin and Keaty on a 2019 Energy Code training session this coming Wednesday, November 6th, from 8 to roughly 11:30 at UCR Palm Desert. and you're all welcome to attend. You guys can perhaps circulate the flyer. We already have a practically full house. We'd love to have you, but if you would like to join us, no cost, please register like tomorrow because we're close to capacity. And this will all about be able to, the new energy code, which goes into effect in January 2020, and we'll have a number of energy efficiency requirements adopted statewide. So if you're interested, we'd love to have you. No cost, of course. Thank you.
Great. Anyone else?
And if I might, David, just to add to that, just to acknowledge that this is a program, the Energy Code ACE, that's basically presented by the investor-owned utilities, Southern California Gas and Southern California Edison, our partners, along with the Sustainability Commission and CVAG and the Desert Valley Builders Association in the workshop.
Thank you.
Thanks, David.
At this time, I would like to go over possible nominations for the chair and vice chair of this committee. I think what we'll do is just open the floor for nominations, and we'll take a vote. So do I have any nominations?
I nominate Richard Friedman as chair.
Okay.
That's second. Okay. That's Kim.
I'd like to nominate David Friedman for an
Iowa. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
So David,
I will go on for inaugural chair for the Community Advisory Committee of the Desert Community Electric. David has focused on energy conservation and renewable energy since he joined the Palm Springs Sustainability Commission in 2015. He advocated for the DCE when it first came before the Palm Springs City Council in 2017. For the past 3 years, he has worked closely with Katie and Benjamin of CVAG on annual energy code training sessions. David had an energy law practice when he was an attorney, so has a strong understanding of energy policy. He is an accomplished parliamentarian and assisted with the governing rules of 1PS, which is a nonprofit corporation under the City of Palm Springs supervision. Because CAC is advisory to DCE, governing by consensus where possible, as Katie mentioned in our July meeting, would be consistent with his goal. I therefore nominate David Friedman for inaugural chair for the Community Advisory Committee of the Desert Community Electric.
Thank you.
Okay. Right. Do we have a second? We had a second. Do we have a? Can we get a vote?
I move the motion.
Okay.
I have a question.
Just,
does that mean we vote?
Yeah, just say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
Any
aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Perfect.
Thank you very much. I'm honored.
We also have a nomination for a vice chair.
I nominate Shelley Kaplan.
Great. Any other? Okay. Do,
second.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Second.
There we go. And move it to a vote. All
aye.
In favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Great.
Thank
all right,
you.
We have a chair and a vice chair. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. I'm honored and delighted to work with all of you.
Chair, how would you like to take over?
Okay. The first thing, if I may, is to go back to the minutes, the previous agenda item, because I think we may have missed over that. So we have for approval the minutes of our last meeting, which is July 11th, which was circulated with the agenda materials, and I would entertain a motion for approval of the minutes. Okay, and is there a second there?
Second.
Okay, and all in favor for approval of our minutes?
Aye.
Aye.
I will recuse.
Aye.
Yeah, okay. Right, so I guess one of the words. Yeah, staying, yeah. Okay. All right, so the next, we've gone through 6A. The next would be CARE FERA Enhanced Enrollment Program. And as mentioned, this was approved by the board at its September meeting. And I'd like Mr. Benjamin Druin to sort of present that and give us more information, and then we can have a discussion and comments.
It was good news that the board approved the contract with Lift to Rise to have them here tonight, and they'll be speaking a little bit too after this. We're very excited about this program, reaching out to the community and partnering with Lift to Rise to accomplish our goals. Our goals will be to enroll 3,000 unenrolled customers that should save annually about $980,000 a year for those low-income residents that can use it the most. The CareFair program is a low-income program that can save residents up to 30% on their energy bills, and they're the ones that need it the most. And we're the board is very excited about this program as well, and we'll be reporting to them regularly on our on its progress, and we'll be seeking your help throughout this process to reach out to the community and as Hector and I work together to reach those goals. I'll let Hector say a few words too. Mind?
Hi everyone. My name is Hector Sanchez Perez. I'm a senior implementation manager with Live to Rise for the Economic Opportunity Can. So to give a little bit of context of who we are, Live to Rise is a collective impact organization. So we work with a variety of stakeholders, business leaders, and grassroots leaders in our two different areas, economic opportunity and housing stability. The Enhancement Enrollment Program is one of our main strategies for the Economic Opportunity Can. And to give you a little context about myself, I grew up my whole life here in Coachella Valley. I went to CB High School, graduated from that high school in 2012. Got my bachelor's degree at UCLA, and I recently graduated from my master's of public health degree at Columbia University in New York. Mm-hmm. So I'm very happy to be back in the Coachella Valley, in my hometown, and you know, being able to put my expertise and everything I learned in my graduate program into practice with Live to Rise and this new enhancement enrollment program. Some updates that I have so far that we've been kind of been working on is we are working on a 10-week plan for a successful January 1st, 2020 launch date for the enhancement enrollment program. So essentially, there'll be four different phases for that 10-week plan. The first phase is doing a lot of the research and power mapping of different potential partners that could help us hit our benchmarks for the enrollment numbers. And as well as doing a lot of objective and indicator setting to have us on track for a successful program. The second phase would be, you know, developing an effective outreach strategy. The third phase would be training our partners. And the fourth phase being, you know, evaluating where we are in our preparation and making the final adjustments for January 1st launch date. So right now we're in the midst of that 10-week plan. And, you know, we're super excited to work with DCE. And, you know, concerns about, you know, working with residents as well. We'll definitely, you know, be looping in residents in the strategizing and implementation of this enhancement enrollment program. So very, very happy to be here.
And we'll be...
I had a question for
sure.
You. When you do this, are there going to be any home visitation enrollment, or will this be strictly paper?
I think that we'll have the capacity to do some home in, actual door-to-door reaching out. We're going to identify what low-income communities that we can find. We'll probably canvas the areas. We'll do a lot of outreach events first to try to gather a larger group at one setting and get them signed up right then. But we will also, as we start saturating or hitting the saturation point for those large events and stuff, we'll start hitting the ground probably.
And I think it's also
engaging the community.
And we'll be close, working very closely with our partners and leveraging their established networks with the community. We definitely want to rely heavily on our partners, not just for us to hit our benchmark goals, but to also, you know, establish sustainability efforts, because we want these, you know, systems in place to, you know, allow these, you know, low-income families or eligible households to be continuously enrolled into these programs beyond a two-year program. So we definitely want to work with our partners and leverage their strengths as well.
And will there be opportunity to give them information on to change over their light bulbs so they don't burn so much energy, insulate and caulk?
And I think a perfect opportunity for, you know, like these types of, like, you know, brainstorming and like strategizing is for, you know, folks to come out to our monthly CAN meetings for the Economic Opportunity CAN. So that's where we, you know, strategize for the utility subsidies program. And that's where a lot of potential collaboration and input from residents themselves can, you know, bring to up to the table, you know, these concerns and ideas so we could implement them into our strategy efforts overall.
Okay.
I'm really interested in how you're laying out the program. And you've already given us so much information.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Would there be an opportunity for you to write some, like you mentioned, three overall strands that you're going to look at first, probably sequentially.
Mm-hmm.
Would you have a chance to write some of that out for us newbies in this area?
Sure, I could work closely with Ben.
It would help me to be able to become a part, be a help to what you're doing.
Yeah.
To know where we are in the big map.
Yeah, and definitely we want to work closely with the community advisory community, since, you know, I'm sure you all in this room, the wisdom is in this room. You all have established networks and folks that could, you know, help out in this sort of endeavor and make a successful two-year program. I definitely see the potential to develop this two-year program into a game-changer and something sustainable for years to come.
So who are your partners you mentioned?
So we have an established new partner.
Oh, okay.
We're kind of just, you know, like doing a lot of relationship building that actually takes time. You know,
who would be an example?
Well, we've met with Senior Advocates of the Desert, Desert ARC, and the Boys and Girls Club of Cathedral City. We're in the talks of, you know, meeting with other potential stakeholders, like, you know, or other organizations such as the Senior Centers in the three different cities, Palm Desert, Cathedral City, and Palm Springs, and other organizations as well.
I was just going to say, once you have a listing of potential partners, mm-hmm. We may, since we know a lot of these organizations, be helpful in terms of that.
Yeah. If we could sort of relay that back. So what would be the best way is that we get the list, and then, Benjamin, we can relay back to you. I can think of a whole bunch. I think Mr. Baker can as well.
And then we'll just build on that list.
So do we want to wait until we get the first list, or what's the best timing? Can we send them now?
You can send any suggestions that you have, and then we'll make sure that Hector and I reach out to them, and then we'll add them to the list.
I mean, I'm sure going to be duplication, but I think we're all coming to this full of ideas of folks. Whatever, and I know in Palm Springs there was a lot of work that was done by, and I think probably also in Cathedral City, working with the community in the districting process. So there are a lot of folks that I know could be out in contact in that way.
Great,
and community events also.
Yes.
Definitely. And we're open to this collaboration. We're Left to Right is a collective impact. We're built on collaboration, so we're open to, you know, folks getting involved and, you know, hearing different types of feedback. So
cool.
Thank you so much.
Where are you guys headquartered? Just out of curiosity.
Right here. Our offices are open to anyone, so whenever you want to pop by, you can drop in.
I ask you to just talk a little bit more. I think one of the things that the board was very supportive of is what you mentioned, sustainability, but how this program, because obviously we really want to, from the board's perspective, this is a real opportunity to reach out to the low-income residents and help make a difference in their lives, hopefully. But in terms of how Lift to Rise is going to work with Desert Community Energy to make those organizations more, the sort of longer-term sustainability of what we're trying to accomplish.
I think what we want to try to do is... Yeah, I think what we want to do is to integrate some of, like, the enrollments for Care and Farah into the services and programming that a lot of the partners are, you know, offering already. Like, be able to have, you know, sustainable, like, events or, you know, staff members that are actually doing the active enrollments for those organizations. I think that will be, you know, a great strategy for that to be sustainable. And secondly, a significant portion of our budget is, you know, dedicated to performance. So there's a $40 compensation for each new enrollee, for every, you know, partner organization that's actually, you know, helping us in enrollment. So we'll make it worthwhile to our partners. So we're not Lift Rise isn't looking to profit from this, you know, budget. We're doing this to help Coachella Valley residents, and those families are eligible for the Care and Fair programs, you know, so.
And that $40 per application that he's talking about is going to go to those entities and organizations to help them train their staff for the long duration. So after they're gone, their staff will still know how to enroll Care and Fair customers and be familiar with the application so that they can continue to do that. And then they'll continue getting a capitation fee. The capitation fee is for collected from Edison, for capturing that client, that new client.
And so the partners would get both the $40 and the contract as well as the capitation fee.
That's possible. That is definitely possible.
So that would be a strong incentive for the partners then. How much is the capitation fee that you know from Edison?
From Edison is $20.
Yeah.
There's also a gas capitation fee, which I think is $10 to $12 in that range.
So potentially $70 per enrollee. For any of these partners that actually, you know, come up with successful enrollees, that's a good incentive then. Okay, now I wasn't sure. Do you want to, the second bullet point under support help needed from the CAC, so we did slightly discuss that in terms of us sending Benjamin contacts and partners. Anything else that you were sort of expecting from us between now and essentially January 1, where we can be of help for a successful launch on 1120?
I think for now that will be sufficient, and we'll, at our next meeting we can decide if we need a little bit more assistance. But it might be just the word of mouth and getting, you know, talking to your respective communities and your okay. folks that you influence.
Another question.
Yes.
So when will you be hiring on? I know you got the core staff. Mm-hmm. But when will you be hiring on additional people to help? Not in like boys and girls.
To write.
But yeah, for.
Oh, we're it.
For a period of time. What?
We're it
right here.
Okay.
And the rest of the Lips to Write staff and will be working closely with me. So they're not present today, but you know, other folks like Jocelyn Vargas, Agustin Areola, and other staff members from Lips to Write will be, you know, supporting me in this endeavor. So it won't just be me here. I'm just representing them, like on behalf of Lips to Write.
I'll talk to you after the meeting. Okay. That's
okay. Great. So the team's already in place and very much, you know, already working on the implementation.
Yep, we're preparing for a successful January 1st launch date.
Okay, great. Okay, so we'll all spread the word and then look forward to further updates as we go along then.
Okay. Yes. Any further questions?
I do have a question. As far as the entities that will be helping us out, will they be receiving some type of certification that allows them to do the capitation for these accounts, or what's to stop the entities from doing that right now?
So right now, through my research, I've discovered there's only two capitation contractors in the whole Coachella Valley. One's the Senior Advocates of the Desert, and the other's Desert Arc. And neither of them have done any applications or submitted any applications in the past couple of years. So, and also what led us to this point for targeting and helping Care and Fair Act customers is our the percentage rate, the penetration rate for our Coachella Valley is lower than the average Riverside County area. Mm. So we feel that there's greater potential for signing up more customers out in our area because we're further out. They probably don't give us as much attention. They don't. I mean, they do their marketing and their billing inserts and stuff, but they don't actually have, you know, boots on the ground here. So what we're trying to do is reach out to those Boys and Girls Clubs and get them either signed up as a capitation contractor. That would be the preferable method because then they can continue the program afterwards. But either we'll use Lift to Rise is applied to be a capitation contractor, so it has DCE. And with that capitation contractor, once we're approved, we get a number that's specific to that entity so that you can track to see how many, you know, applications that you get in per month. But our goal is to get more capitation contractors in the Coachella Valley, so that way this program does become more sustainable.
So will we also be trained on how to sign these companies up and go through that process of doing the application for the state, or is this a countywide?
No, actually, it's an SCE program. So, and I've got a call in with Edison to meet with those folks, with their care specialists, to find out exactly how they sign people up, how easy is the application, if we can streamline it, all that kind of stuff, and if they offer training to new capitation contractors. So once I find out more of that information, I'll be able to share that with you guys. Okay. But that's the plan. Okay.
And the materials, I believe this was discussed at the board meeting, but the materials, the enrollment materials, are both in Spanish and English?
Correct.
Okay. All yep. right. That's good. So that, you know, there's further outreach there. Mm-hmm.
Right. Thanks for touching on that. I do want to reiterate that the Coachella Valley is very predominantly Spanish-speaking, so any presentations, anything that we're going to put in print, already have it in mind, it's going to have to be in Spanish as well.
Yep.
So if we're doing it in English, let's do it in Spanish too.
Exactly.
Agreed. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's important.
Just how does Lift to Write get its financing?
For like
to just to
operations, yeah. Like in general, we applied to several grants. To
so it's grant funding.
It's grant funding. Okay. Yeah, we're a nonprofit.
Okay. Any further questions, comments on this agenda item? Okay. All right. So we're moving to 6C, next page, overview of CCA and Desert Community Energy, and Mr. Green, further presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Raven. So last meeting, I did a quick overview on CCAs in general. I know a lot of you weren't here, but some of you were. I'm going to go through a little briefer presentation on CCA background, and then I'll go into my item D as well following this. Desert Community Energy is a joint powers authority consisting of three cities. Palm Desert, Palm Springs, and Cathedral City got together and decided they wanted to buy and sell power cheaper than Edison does. They got together, talked about it, and they formed Desert Community Energy. It's governed by a board of directors made up of elected representatives from each of the participating jurisdictions. The idea behind the program is that it will provide many benefits to the community. One of them, a big one, is reducing the city's carbon footprint through the increase of green energy resources and procurement at competitive rates. They'll also be able to develop local green energy infrastructure and programs. They'll bring energy decisions to the local level, so we'll retain a lot of local control. And they'll give customers a choice on choosing greener energy. They'll support community-based programs that reach disadvantaged communities for other and other undeserving customers, such as this Care and Fair program that we're working on. And it'll create local jobs and promote economic development. Rather than the money going to the investor-owned utilities, now it will stay within our community. The way it works currently is SCE buys the power, sells the power, delivers it to the customer, and then sends them a bill. The way it will work when DCE takes over, we'll become the buyer and seller of the power, but SCE will still maintain the delivery lines, transmission of the energy, and the customer billing. So right now, DCE offers two options. There's the basic option called the Desert Saver, or they can choose. Customers can choose to opt up to the carbon-free option. It's a little bit higher in cost, but it will really help out the environment. The DCE board determines what product offerings to offer and at what level of green they should be at. Eventually, our DCE board could choose to offer a 100% renewable option or even a local renewable option. And the board will look at the rate structures on an annual basis. So what are the benefits of DCE? Well, we get competitive rates. We get local control and local power. We get investment in our community. And we get reduced greenhouse gases, and we can choose greener resources. So the way it is right now, Palm Springs has decided that they will launch first. We're still trying to determine when that launch will be. It's going to be sometime in 2020. SCE has indicated that they are launching they have a customer service platform that they're redoing that's 30 years antiquated. And they're finally updating it. When we originally wanted to launch DCE in 2018, there was a huge spike in energy, and it became unfeasible to launch. So we pulled back. The board decided to pull back and wait for a better opportunity. We picked a new date, and SCE told us, no, we can't choose that date because we're launching our new platform. So we had to pick another date. That date has kind of shifted back and forth recently, and we're still trying to determine whether we can launch in early 2020 or late 2020. And once we get a decision, we'll be able to inform you. We should be having a decision pretty soon. anyway, so Palm Springs City Council, as I said, they will launch first, and their council decided to vote to launch at a 100% carbon-free option for their entire city. That is a really impactful decision by that council. right now, Palm Springs' carbon footprint is around 431,000 metric tons for their whole city. With that one action by their city, they reduced their carbon footprint by 118,000 metric tons, which is about a 27% reduction. It's like replacing all the cars in Palm Springs and replacing them with bicycles. It's pretty amazing. Cathedral City and Palm Desert are still both very interested in launching, and they'll consider a launch date sometime in 2021. Our consultant team is constantly monitoring for the most feasible launch date. Right now it looks like that launch date could be April, and that's what we're trying to shoot for.
Ben?
Yes?
Have Cathedral City or Palm Desert made a decision with respect to municipal purchase?
It is too late for them. Well, we've submitted our load forecasting, it's too late. Even if they decided they want to launch the municipal, we can't accommodate that. Thanks. So we didn't get the decision. So speaking of our consultants, we can jump into our team now and item D if you're ready.
Earlier during the introduction of the program, you said that DCE is looking to create local jobs. Is that correct, or were you talking about something
else? With the opportunity of buying and selling power and keeping that the money local, it provides us with an opportunity to provide local jobs. Like if DCE, once revenues are established, start looking into building solar fields or something, it will also increase, give an opportunity for local jobs.
Okay, but are we looking at like staff jobs or jobs that will contract out? What?
Probably both. Like we, right now with Lift Arise, we've contracted out, and that's local jobs, and there can be opportunities for more.
I just add to that. Mm-hmm. Just to, I think this is one of the real opportunities that Desert Community has as time goes along. And so, as has been described, the first step is for the agency to become essentially financially stable, make sure it's on a solid footing. Most of the initial revenues will go towards a reserve, a financial reserve, which will insulate the agency if there's a rate increase that would give some protection against some of those risks. But one of the really key benefits of community choice is the opportunity to invest in local projects. So the DCE board could be making a decision at a point in the future to maybe invest in a solar project or some kind of maybe a storage project. Any of those kinds of opportunities could be there. The other option is that revenues could be used for local programs, incentive programs for customers. A lot of the community choice agencies in the state are, for example, offering incentives for electric vehicles. That makes a lot of sense. If you're selling electricity, you're kind of creating more customers, if you will. But at the same time, there's a lot of those kinds of opportunities, and that's the kind of information that we want to bring to this group as we go along, and you know, you'll be providing input on those sorts of things. But that's definitely a very strong aspect of community choice that we look towards once, again, that sort of key factor of getting on a financial footing first.
Can you address, perhaps when we get to consultants, I believe it's Calpine, and I believe there's a question, Mr. Diaz, that you raised at the board meeting last week, of sort of a combination of timing and process for selection of the energy mix. Palm Springs will launch sometime next year. You know, what are we going to get in terms of, you know, our house Calpine going to decide, you know, what is, Mr. Diaz raised the question of renewable energy certificates, which are out there. Is it, you know, contracting with, you know, with really not local wind farms, but other wind farms or other solar farms? So if you can, I believe it's Calpine that would be, you know, working on that, but if you can address sort of their process and, you know, how they're going to, what their timing from it.
I'll do my best. And, okay. It would actually be the Energy Authority.
Oh, Energy Authority.
Yeah,
okay. Calpine's doing the customer service.
Yeah, Calpine's doing customer service. Okay, so, or are we ready?
Yeah, any further questions on that? Because I think that sort of dovetails into the next. So which consultant is doing what?
Mm-hmm. So our team, this is the first is our is the Energy Authority, we call them T for short. We're going to get a lot of acronyms here coming up. T is a public-owned power nonprofit corporation with offices in Jacksonville, Florida, and Bellevue, Washington. The Energy Authority provides public power utilities with access to advanced resources and technology systems so they can respond competitively in changing energy markets. Simply put, they buy power on behalf of a CCA for the lowest possible price. T would be considered DCE's backbone. They are the team that keeps us informed on energy market fluctuations, or energy market fluctuations, changes in CCA requirements, and when it would be most feasible to launch. They're responsible for these items and much, much more. They provide DCE with load forecasts, which are calculated estimates of costs, the cost of power that DCE would require for its customers if DCE were to launch at any given scenario. So if DCE can launch in April, then the Energy Authority will give us a calculation and some numbers and say, okay, it's feasible, we can do it. And they'll give us a chart showing us, you know, about approximately how much money we could earn in revenues and how much it would cost us to procure power for that month. If we do it in September, they do another calculation. They have a whole spreadsheet that they provide, and they're pretty down to science on that. They take into consideration the energy market, the current energy market, the different types of energy that they'll have to procure, and that that's what they do for us. They also develop our energy portfolio, as you were indicating, based on our board's requirements or recommendations. If the board wants no nuclear, well, then the Energy Authority will exclude nuclear from the portfolio. If our board wants more renewables, then the Energy Authority will go out and find more renewables for the portfolio. So they're the team that goes and deals with all the recs and the requirements and the standards that the state puts in for energy procurement.
I got a question, I think, from this point. So what's the time scale at which we'll be buying energy? It sounds like it's monthly. These days, you know, energy can almost be purchased in real time.
There are actually three different... Katie's going to have to tell me a little... There's actually three different times that we'll have to report our energy and three different requirements. There's the local obligation, the resource adequacy...
So you're talking about... maybe just in a general way with regard to that question, we're still, as Benjamin described, identifying when, and that's a coordination with Southern California Edison, that we could begin serving customers in Palm Springs. But let's just say if we were going to start serving customers, I'll just say April or May, the procurement is going to need to start happening pretty quick, probably towards the end of this year and into January. The Energy Authority is essentially like a stock exchange type function, if you will. I mean, they have power buyers who spend their day buying and selling electricity. We have an approval process that we go through. But I think in terms of the earlier question about that timing, so the procurement will start fairly soon once we get certainty of the months that we're going to be able to start serving customers. But in terms of that conversation that you asked about the board's input and the discussion about RECs, renewable energy credits, and other things, we anticipate having presentation on that topic. We actually did spend quite a bit of time on this subject with the board when we started. Now we're kind of coming back around and bringing that up again. But we'd anticipate having a presentation to the board in the next month or two at upcoming meetings to talk to them specifically about that issue. Their board has already made a decision not to procure from nuclear energy or new large hydropower. And obviously the focus is on carbon-free electricity as much as possible. But that would be a conversation, and we'd be happy to try to set up a time for one of your meetings to do the same thing, give you sort of an overview of, you know, here's the different sources and the opportunities that we have for renewable and that kind of thing. So that's a topic we could schedule for a future meeting.
Okay.
Okay, but I think, Mr. Goins, your question was, I think I get it, but let you go ahead.
Yeah, saying, do you buy it monthly or do you buy it quarterly?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry, I went into the...
But maybe you answered it. It sounds like we're actually buying power maybe up to 6 months in advance of when that power will actually be used by a customer. So the time scale at which we'll be purchasing and using power is very different than an investor-owned utility.
It's pretty similar in terms of, the way that power is purchased, it's honestly bought in allotments of time, and some of those, the state has newer requirements on longer-term contracts and renewable contracts, and all of those things are basically the Energy Authority's job to make sure that we meet those requirements. So we could, initially, most of that power is going to be purchased maybe 3 months out, but there would also need to be a certain percentage of those without getting in too much into the weeds on longer-term contracts as well.
Do you want to talk about resource adequacy?
So that was the other, So the other thing that Benjamin touched on is what's called resource adequacy, lots of terms, RA. and one of the things that the Public Utilities Commission did, which affected DCE, was to bring in new requirements. Resource adequacy, as best I can describe it, is kind of like the, it's sort of a buffer, if you will. Shelley, how would you describe resource adequacy?
I would think of it more in terms of the CPUC making sure that and that an entity has enough power to be able to keep the lights
on. It's basically the Public Utilities Commission, which governs everything we do as well as what the utilities do, requires that all what's called a load-serving entity acquire a certain amount of electricity in the event there's a extreme temperature or in the event there's an earthquake or in any kind of eventuality that you might predict. So they're basically saying we want to make sure that if something out of the ordinary, they're constantly monitoring the load, and they will require, but we're required to purchase that, and there's three different categories, which is probably more detailed than most of us need, but in any case, that's a requirement that that's kind of part of what we're discussing with Southern California Edison. We have to go out and purchase that earlier than some of the other power. And it's all of these things are monitored by the Public Utilities Commission and by the California Independent System Operator. I mean, there's obviously a tremendous amount of oversight on what goes on in the electricity business. But the good news is that Community Choice has been around with Marin County like 10 years now, almost 10 years. They started in 2010. And so there's a much greater understanding and acceptance, if you will, and sort of path to follow as far as how it all works. So, does that answer your question, John?
Sure. It sounds like you don't. It seems like you're figuring it out, but at the high level, you answered it. I think.
It's like I say, the actual purchases could range anywhere from within tomorrow to 6 months out. Longer. Yes.
Resource adequacy also could be thought of as spinning reserves in the sense of how quickly can it be dispatched to the grid from that resource adequacy, basically.
It has to be available.
Yeah, very quickly.
To touch on that real quick, too, that might be changing as far as the requirement of 15%, which may or may not be a requirement for us as a CCA, because FERC, the Federal Energy Regulation Commission, recently approved and gave authorization for CAISO to acquire their own resources whenever they see fit to maintain reliability on their grid. So we can, you know, make sure that we want the best for our customers, but at the end of the day, CAISO will decide what type of power goes on the grid if it comes to a reliability issue. And then let me touch also on the RECs. As far as TEA, can they take direction from the board to purchase bundled RECs versus unbundled? And a REC, a renewable energy certificate, is pretty much a receipt that renewable energy was produced or was made. Bundled RECs is, if I'm a power company, I sell you the electricity I produce along with the receipt. That's a bundled REC. There's companies that are allowed to sell just the receipts, just the certification of the power being produced without requiring the purchaser to consume the power. That's why If we can make it an exclusion, just like we can make it an exclusion to not buy nuclear energy, we can make it an exclusion to make sure that we don't get into buying or selling RECs that can increase our greenhouse gas emissions at the end of the day, which was something that Marin County went through. I suggest that everybody do a little research on the hiccups that they had when they first started.
Marion County?
Marion County.
Well, what is the benefit of buying a REC without the collateral?
It helps you meet your renewable portfolio standard. So if we have a 30% renewable standard, well, that allows us to reach that number while still allowing us to procure cheaper energy like natural gas and other sources.
But the unbundled RECs are essentially the equivalent of a security. They're simply traded.
I always like to say, if you go to a steakhouse and you purchase a steak, you don't want the receipt on the dinner plate. Yeah. You know, want your steak and your receipt.
Yeah. So an unbundled is just a pure financial traders will be doing that, and they aren't necessarily. They could be many steps away, removed from the people actually using the renewable.
This is like a secured advisory.
Correct. I recommend that one of the goals for this board to be is to highly suggest and recommend to our electeds to look into this issue a lot deeper, because that's just one layer of the onion.
Well, and I think certainly to answer your, in terms of the decision-making process, the board of DCE makes those decisions. So that's really the added benefit of that local control. That's kind of where the local control comes from. And the fact that you all and any resident, Rosario or anybody else, could come to the board and say, I think you should make this decision. I'm going to have to go back because the RECs issue has been discussed, and I'll have to go back in our notes and just see what that conversation was, not in any detail, or maybe
I can't remember.
Maybe not at all.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, we'll but that will be an issue that would come before the board in terms of a conversation about the that whole procurement process.
Okay. If you could perhaps get back to us before the next meeting and let us know, and then sort of schedule, you know, see what you can sort of do in terms of scheduling that presentation, because I think it's part of, I think, one of the goals of TCE is to, you know, to encourage, whether it's hopefully locally, but if not locally, the increase in, you know, building of renewable resources, solar and wind, and potentially geothermal in the East Valley, which, you know, the technology is perhaps finally catching up there, and that would be, you know, local. I do realize that all of our wind goes to, you know, Florida, and we don't get it, but, you know, maybe there's something that can be done on there if it's snow, but essentially it's the people who own the most of the windmills are, it's a subsidiary of affiliated with Florida Power and Light, so I think they it goes, you know, off the system.
The energy goes wherever it needs to go.
But essentially, but it's harder to capture that locally. It's generated locally. It's harder than it might seem to actually buy it locally.
You have to make a new microgrid.
That would be. You
know, that should be the ultimate goal, right?
That should be.
That's something that we can talk about. All right. Any further questions? I mean, personally, but I think a lot of us are very strongly interested in this procurement, and so if you keep us posted on that so that we can, you know, provide, you know, at least our suggestions to the board, because I think that is one of the areas that, you know, many of us are interested in, so that we can, you know, say, hey, this is something we've looked at and we'd like to see, you know, consistent with the board's obligations, you know, following priorities.
I think what we would anticipate is having the Energy Authority make a presentation to you about the topic. I mean, if you want to get feedback from you on the sorts of topics.
That'd be good.
Okay,
are we ready to move on to for the next to the next to Calpine?
Next consultant, Calpine. Okay, Calpine Energy Solutions. It's a Fortune 500 company and America's largest generator of electricity from natural gas and geothermal resources. Calpine uses advanced technologies to generate power in a low carbon and environmentally responsible manner throughout the United States. They provide us with all of our data communication services with SCE, the billing coordination, the customer service call center for DCE, and they will coordinate our pre- and post-launch enrollment notices, The notice is that we have to send 60 days, 30 days prior to launch, and then 30 days or 60 days after launch. They'll operate our integrated voice response, IDR system for all calls coming into DCE, and that will include any opt-outs or opt-ups or opt-downs. They'll also coordinate with SCE to ensure that all billing processes are uninterrupted during the implementation of DCE. So that's what their main focus is. They're our big brain for the data.
And maybe just to summarize real quick, because not everybody was here when we went into this in more detail, but so essentially when DCE starts serving customers, which we will do in Palm Springs next year, there's a requirement that we send notices to every customer 60 days in advance, two notices 60 days before. Let's say the launch date would be, to pick a date, May 1st. 60 days in advance, we'd send two different mailed notices to every customer, and in following 60 days, another two notices. So before and after, the customers all get that notice. Calpine will be the company that works for us to make sure the addresses are correct, that every question that anyone has. So when we're ready to serve customers, we'll have a call center, we'll have a phone number, and customers can call the call center and get answers. Most of those questions are answered at that level by the Calpine team. We have a specific script that we've prepared in concert with them, so it's tailored to the Coachella Valley. Mm-hmm. But if a customer has a question that needs to be elevated to us, then it would be. But in general, I just want to help you understand that we're going to have a lot of support for our customers. And, of course, you guys are all an important part of that. So there's that answer questions and then just making sure that the billing is accurate. We'll talk a little bit more, but customers will have the choice of staying with there's different options, and everybody has the option of staying with Edison if they choose to do so. So their job will also be to clearly explain that. They can do that online. They can do that over the phone. They could do it by mail if they chose to. But it's a very quick and easy process. If someone chooses to stay with Edison, they'll have that choice. They'll have the choice of the two different options Ben mentioned earlier. And Calpine's job will be to work with us to make sure everybody is well informed. And they do this for almost all of the community choice agencies in the state. So they're very, they're really a strong team. And anyway, that's another resource that we have.
So to be clear, Palm Springs will only have the option of Edison or 100%.
No, actually, so for Palm Springs, just as an example, the city council chose to put everyone in the city, the city itself plus everyone, into the 100% carbon-free option. If a customer, that is going to result in a 5 to 10%, probably 5 to 9% increase in rates. So if a customer does not want to have that, they can opt to the basic product, which will be at or perhaps slightly below Southern California Edison prices. And everyone will have that choice. Or they can stay with Edison if they choose to do so.
Can I just clarify one? Is it 5 to 9% on the energy part of their bill, which is
generation
deal with the transmissions, which is a significant part of the bill. So if they look at if you actually look at your bill, I think this is right. It's going to be 3 to 5%. It's not going to be 5 to 9%.
Yeah,
of the total bill.
Yeah. That's my understanding as well. That is the generation price will be for 100%. But it's as Mr. Floyd just mentioned. That's transmission, which remains an Edison cost, is at least half of your bill at any one point.
That's right. And Kim's reminding me, we always really want to talk about the total bill because that's what matters.
Yeah.
Right. And there will be information on our website once we get into it. There'll be a place where they can go look at what their bill's going to look like and understand where that all comes from. But that's a fair point, definitely.
Yes.
Rusia, do you have another question there? Okay.
No, no.
Okay.
I have any questions?
Yes.
Yeah. For the call center, is that going to be a locally based call center, or is that outsourced? Where is that call center going to be physically?
I think physically they're in San Diego. I think they're based out in San Diego.
Is there a way to have something here locally so that we could serve the local communities?
I actually did some research on costs of call centers and stuff. Calpine is definitely the best deal. Eventually, when DCE builds a reserve and starts running as a business on its own, and we start maybe fine-tuning out the consultants and needing them less as we get more knowledgeable, then we'll look to probably having some kind of a in-house call center. I know some of the CCAs are doing that. Once they start getting enough reserves, then they can hire more staff. They can bring more things in-house. So
GPS eventually, lost.
Eventually, yes, we can bring stuff like that in-house. But for now, Calpine is definitely the best deal.
Okay, so were you able to find anything local? Was that a big difference, or are we just going out there?
Most of the call centers that I talk to are all outsourced, and that's why they're cheaper. They're all, you know, yeah. So no, nothing local that would work.
Any question, to sort of anticipate also Mr. Diaz's comments, Calpine does have Spanish language
yes.
capabilities, and to some degree this sort of leads into the DCE launch, but the notices to all of the residents will be, will those be sent in both Spanish and English?
I
can go grab some. I handed out the brochure that we used last time. I'll go grab those. But that's basically English-Spanish reverse.
Okay.
There is a Spanish-language version of the website, and all of the notices will go out. And it's basically a letter with Spanish-English on either side.
Okay, because those of us who were solar didn't get the notices, so I didn't see them.
And if there's someone else with another language, that would also be, I mean, Calpine serves Los Angeles County, for example, where they're dealing with a whole lot of other English as a second language customers, so if there were another language that was needed, we could be able to provide
that. There is a large Philippine community in Palm Springs, and that might be, I guess Tagalog would be the language.
Well, Tagalog is bigger than Malay
But that might be something that if not necessarily a full brochure, but perhaps sort of some sort of indication that there would be Philippine language, Tagalog, support language.
Yeah, there's pretty much, I think I'm fair to say, maybe not every single possibility, but they are prepared to handle other languages.
Okay. I mean, some degree this goes into sort of the outreach at the launch, but that's fine. Just make sure that Calpine would have all of that capabilities then. Okay. Any further questions on Calpine next? Sorry for the third degree on each of these.
I don't mind. This is good, and we're talking about each one. Our next consultant is Lean Energy, and Lean stands for Local Energy Aggregation Network. They're dedicated to the accelerated expansion and competitive success of clean energy CCA nationwide. So they work in partnership with a range of organizations like DCE to actively support the formation and operation successes of CCAs around the country. They do this sometimes on a pro bono. They do this on an advisory basis as well as through professional services contracts with states and municipalities interested in forming CCAs. And that's what we have with them. We have a services agreement with them.
Excuse me, are they lobbyists? Is that
kind of? I mean, they not number.
I don't know if they're actually a nonprofit, but not a lobbyist. They're an agency that was formed in order to promote community choice aggregation. Mm-hmm. And they do consulting work for some of them. We haven't used them recently, but they do work with, currently a lot of their focus actually is in expanding community choice to other states besides California. So they're not a lobbying firm, or so maybe an advocacy.
So what benefit do they provide to us?
It's okay. The question just started before we. Anyway, so their programs consist of four core functions: outreach, information, and education is their primary focus. They educate state and local officials and stakeholder groups, much like us, to seek to raise awareness about the benefits of CCAs to any audience that want to learn about it. They offer how-to presentations, webinars, educational workshops, and web-based resources to a lot of the companies and groups that are interested in having them. They've presented at numerous national and international conferences before. They also are focused on CCA formation and development. They provide information, key contacts, and professional advisory services for communities much like DCE wishing to pursue a CCA. They assisted us in the development and adoption of all of our policies and our procedures. They are also into regulatory and legislative affairs. They support new state legislation around the United States, and they participate in a lot of the initiatives that are going on in California. And they also look into new market development and innovation. So a big part of their job is to share CCA best practices and support the adoption of CCA enabling legislations in new states. So that's what their function is, their four core functions. Any questions on me?
Where are they based? Are they based here in California?
They're actually, I don't know.
Bay Area.
Bay Area.
Bay Area. Okay, sounded like they were California based just because California's had long time, 10 years for CCAs, and Massachusetts has it, but there aren't that many states that are doing it yet.
Yeah.
There's a fun fact, actually, very based out of California. The founder was ex-mayor of Mill Valley, the city that did the first CCA.
Oh,
so she, since then, has left government and now stepped into private sector, so hopefully we can depend on her expertise.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, that's good to know. And if she's down in this area, it'd be nice to have a chance to sort of, you know, meet her and see
and
what she's doing.
As Benjamin said, Lean worked with us quite a bit at the start in helping the board. There was some work on some of the priorities and setting up all the policies and procedures, and they're available to us as we go along.
Yeah. Okay. We'll probably start interacting with them a little bit more as we get ready to launch again. But
I think they also helped us in terms of some of the regulations and legislation that was going on at the time.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Any more questions on me? Otherwise, we'll somebody who folks who are local, Burke Ricks.
Brian. Yes. Burke Ricks. Burke Ricks Communications. They're an award-winning Coachella Valley-based firm specializing in government affairs advocacy, public relations, marketing, and community outreach, campaign strategy, and event production. We've used them quite a few times. They put on our energy summits that were largely attended for many years in a row, and I believe they just did Coachella's cannabis and symposium. So they coordinate all of our local outreach efforts, from media stories and social media posts to radio broadcasts and postcards, to ensure consistent branding messaging. They'll be responsible for coordinating the messages. Messaging and mailing of all of our enrollment notices that go out before and after each launch, or before and after launch. They'll also coordinate a series of public informational workshops to help educate the attendees on what DCE is all about. Questions with Burke Ricks? Okay. And then now we'll move into another one of our consultants, Don Dame. He's our invaluable jack of all trades. Man in the CCA arena. He had a long career with
it's Northern, it's called Northern California Power Authority. It's gas and electricity utilities for most of his career.
Yes. He is an energy expert, 40 years of with that gas utility company. We turned to him for our number crunching, data gathering, budget projections, and complicated spreadsheets to help us understand and make better decisions about various risk factors and what to look for. He has helped us understand a lot in the CareFaro program that we're getting ready to launch. He did an analysis on that and provided to the DCE board.
That's where I've seen his name.
To help us understand the potential that we have for enrollees. And he's been with us since the start, and we sure hope he stays for a long time after. We all love him. And then finally, can't forget our lawyers. Best and Krieger is DCE's legal counsel. Enough said.
And their city attorney for Palm Springs and a few other cities.
A few other cities too, Palm Desert also.
Yeah, Palm Desert.
Sea Bag.
Okay, great. Okay, so my personal thought is that they're about the best. And if you're interested, they have lots of very good legal alerts that I subscribe to. So.
And the individual legal counsel who work for us for DCE are specialists in community choice and do a lot of the regulatory and legislative, and our current negotiations with Southern California Edison are all handled through
and Asbestos. They're based, that person is here in La Quinta in Riverside?
He's actually in the Irvine office.
Irvine office, yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Close enough, if necessary.
For greenhouse gas emissions reduction purposes, when we have these consultants participate, we generally have them come in by phone or other means as opposed to driving out here. Yeah. So we're trying to keep our carbon footprint low.
Because otherwise they're stuck on the 91 for 3 hours.
Exactly.
All right, any further questions on the consultants? And obviously, as folks are sort of in town, you know, in conjunction with our meetings, it'd be nice to sort of see them. And I think particularly as we move towards launch, that's where we want to see Brian and Josh, you know, so we have a chance to have a dialogue with them as we move to, because that's where the rubber will hit the road. So.
Yep.
Which I guess means we can move on to the next point, which is...
Excuse me.
Kim, yeah. Sorry.
Excuse me. Where in this process is it likely that, for example, Palm Springs, when you're doing the work that you'll be doing, will you be looking at this Burke Ritz communications as a possible vendor and not the only vendor? When will the individual... You know, cities, I guess it would be the city, or, you know.
From the Palm Springs, having discussed this with Patrick Catalarico's manager of our Office of Sustainability and Councilmember Coors, Palm Springs is looking to DCE and all of these consultants. So essentially, the input from Palm Springs is to the decision back in June for council to say everyone starts by default in the 100% carbon free. But I think after that, there's no intention to hire separate folks. Really, it is the DCE process. So I hope that answers your question, but essentially there's not going to be a duplication of the team. It would be DCE that, you know, working with these consultants that sends out all of the notices and essentially does the outreach. I think that's the position of Mr. Talarico. That, you know, there's obviously substantial overlap between us and the Sustainability Commission, so we'll, you know, work closely all together, but it's essentially a DCE function as opposed to a Palm Springs function. That's certainly my understanding from Mr. Talarico, who has a lot of other things to be doing in Palm Springs.
Yes, he has a lot on his plate.
Yeah.
And we did go through a competitive request for proposals process to select Burke Ritz, and definitely one of the advantages that they had is they are a local firm. But I think the other aspect of that is DCE will be the one providing that outreach through our consultant team. However, we will be working with each city to, you know, make sure that the messages we work with Amy and the city of Palm Springs and to craft those messages and use the existing resources that the city has to, you know, get things out on the website and all of that. So there'd be coordination, but the role for DCE is to take on that responsibility so as not to add additional staff for the jurisdiction.
Where I think, and this leads into the next point of DCE launch, where the Palm Springs input is going to have to be the most important is the messaging around the city council's choice to put everyone in the default, because that's not a DCE decision. DCE leaves that to each city. Mm-hmm. That's the decision of the city council. So while the the communication will be a TCE communication. I think there's an expectation of close sort of, you know, coordination with Palm Springs folks, so that we don't have, you know, finger pointing, et cetera. So I think that's the key area because of the council's decision to have everyone by default. And hopefully that messaging will very much say, thank you, this is where we get to our greenhouse gas emissions. So I don't want to bother sort of the other folks, but this is a really big issue of the Sustainability Commission right now. So I think there'll be, you know, close coordination on that issue and can serve as a template for the other cities. Okay, so are we ready to move then to sort of lead on to the next?
We've already touched on some of this.
DCE launch.
Yes, we've already covered that. We're still in talks with SCE to determine when we can actually launch. But we know we'll get an answer pretty soon here. We do want to start talking about outreach to the DCE communities, and once we get that launch date, we'll be able to better determine when we can start our movement and have our outreach discussions. That's when we'll start looking to you guys more with the messaging and distribution of the materials that we start accumulating.
Questions from the others? No, I have a couple there. Yes.
What is the status of the other, when you say communities, I assume you meant Palm Springs here, but actually were you mentioned, did you mean the other municipalities, and what is the status of the other municipalities?
So DCE is essentially three cities, Cathedral City, Palm Springs, and Palm Desert. When we start our launch, even though we're only initially launching Palm Springs first, we're still going to inform the other cities and keep them in the loop of the process. They won't get their residents won't get the notices or anything like that because they're not launching yet. But we're going to still maintain that message so that they know what's going on. And
so they'll sort of be able to benefit from our mistakes. That's the hope, right?
Not too many, little bit.
Not too many.
Yes.
So we're not going to make any mistakes. But I think that's sort of the dual track, and the board really, there was a conversation about having like Palm Springs Community Advisory Committee and Cathedral City Palm Desert, but the board really wanted all of you to work together. And so, but part of our mission is to work with Palm Springs on the launch in 2020, while at the same time we'd be working with Cathedral City and Palm Desert on informing the residents, companies, commercial customers, and certainly the city council on, you know, the opportunities and basically providing whatever. I think we're anticipating, we haven't actually scheduled anything, but we've had some conversations with the city manager in Cathedral City about presentations for the city council, and likewise for the city of Palm Desert, we'd be expecting to make a presentation to the city council probably sometime in, it's almost November, in the month of November. We're waiting to get that scheduled. So there will be, working with Palm Springs on serving customers, working with Palm Desert and Cathedral City on, you know, more about DCE, is this a choice that the council wants to make to go forward, and when, and all of that. So there's sort of two tracks there.
From the perspective, if the other two cities are deciding to potentially move ahead in 2021, when would they need to make the decision? When would their councils need to make the decisions by?
The decision will actually need to be made fairly soon, because all of this ties into what we have to report to the Public Utilities Commission in March and April. April, we have to file what's called a load forecast with the Public Utilities Commission, which essentially says this is the amount of electricity that we're going to need to provide. And so adding Palm Desert and Cathedral City would need to be in that April load forecast. There is an adjustment in August, but we've informed the board members that that would be the timing, is to make that decision probably by January. I mean, given the holiday time period, January, February.
So that's helpful for me to know.
Yeah.
Okay, any...
I do have a question.
Yes.
With the JPA, is it a requirement that you have two cities proceed forward to move along with this program, or what's stopping Palm Springs from doing this by themselves? I mean, obviously at that point we wouldn't have a JPA because it's one city acting by themselves, right? But do you need two cities to sign up? Is there any obligation of the cities going forward? If Palm Springs does decide to launch, what happens to Cathedral City and to Palm Desert at that point? So can they exit? Can they just still decide to move forward? As far as my knowledge, Palm Desert has voted no on it, and Cathedral City still has yet to make a decision of whether or not you're going to proceed.
Well, Palm Desert and Cathedral City Councils both voted not to proceed in 2020. They haven't voted they haven't made any decision to go forward in 2021 or do anything different at this point. They did make a decision, like I say, not to go forward in 2020. So that will be the item that will be...
They also made the decision not to withdraw from the JPA as well. So.
Right.
So, at that time.
So in terms of that, the JPA does provide for a member jurisdiction to withdraw if they choose to do so. And in terms of the board has made some recent decisions with regard to how expenses are tracked, because obviously there'll be revenue coming in Palm Springs, generated by Palm Springs customers, and the board wanted to have that tracked, as well as the expenses associated with basically the procurement side of the DCE business, if you will. But I think there's a fair amount of flexibility in the joint powers agreement with regard to the choice of an individual member.
Just for a little back history, do you know how many cities we originally started with? How many have opted out? How many have withdrawn?
Okay. Well, the cities that are eligible are those that are served by Southern California Edison. So in the Coachella Valley, the cities of La Quinta, Indio, Coachella, and parts of Riverside County that are served by Imperial Irrigation District wouldn't be eligible. There's no CCA program, if you will, for a public utility. So we approached Desert Hot Springs and Indian Wells, both made a decision back in 2017, if I remember correctly, to wait and see, not to go forward at that time. The city of Rancho Mirage has formed their, essentially through another joint powers agency, tied into Lancaster, it's called CalChoice, had started a community choice program in 2018. The city of Blythe would be the other city that would be eligible, and we haven't actually had any formal decisions by their city council, but it's certainly an option. You know, any of those cities could choose to join before 2021 if they wanted to. We'd have to move that along.
Or after.
So any, correct, yeah, right. Any of the CCAs any of the jurisdictions served by, including the Riverside County, the portion of Riverside County served by Southern California Edison would be eligible. But it is limited to investor-owned utilities.
Thank you.
Is Riverside counting? There were many discussions about Riverside County doing something for its unincorporated areas, but potentially together with San Bernardino. But I think those discussions seem to have slowed down, ended.
As far as I know, the county hasn't chosen to go forward with community choice.
Okay. Because there are folks, there's a bizarre section of Palm Springs, but not in Palm Springs, but literally one side of the street is Palm Springs and the other side is the county.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be an area where potentially, you know, there could be outreach to that area. And some unincorporated areas just north of Palm Springs, but before you get to DHS, so you know, perhaps at some point that could be, could be considered. Well, you'd have to probably work with Supervisor Perez to sort of see how that could be done. But I can imagine where there's a neighborhood in Palm Springs that we know that's half in the city and half not in the city, but it's in the same neighborhood organization that's fully represented in 1PS. And so if we're doing a presentation to 1PS, there's going to be people saying, wait a minute, what about us?
A And that would be a decision for Riverside County to participate. Yeah. It would be a Board of Supervisors.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying potentially outreach to Supervisor Perez to perhaps reach these areas in the quote-unquote areas of influence, which is, I think, a term that, you know, that perhaps that could be done, because those folks in the county get all of their services, police and fire, from Palm Springs.
Okay.
Anyway, that's a minor detail then. Any further questions? And I have one or two other points on this one for that. I guess, and this sort of is also with respect to care and fear, it'd be very nice so that when the notices go to everyone in Palm Springs, there's some form of insert once again in Spanish and English to let them know about the care and fear, so that folks, you know, who, you know, literally they will be getting stuff in the mail, that's everybody, so that they're aware, particularly when we say, well, your rates might be going up, you know, by the default. Yes?
I had the opportunity to review the applications.
Yeah.
And this is one of the most stunning parts of Live to Rise, is that I think all but one of the people that were noted were bilingual.
Yeah. So we'll want
really
their,
unique. It's really unique.
We'll group. Want their input on that to make sure that the messaging that goes out, and it very much is a suggestion for outreach to low income customers. The very first thing is to make sure that that Lyft Arise is involved closely in this process, so that so any communications that go out also include information about their programs. It's just a way of literally getting it in front of, you know, every customer in Palm Springs with those materials. So that would be good. And at least from my perspective, suggestions about people to work with on, you know, care and fear are exactly the same people that we would want to be, you know, have them involved in. It's not two separate things. So the it's really the same folks. It's not officially in the Lyft Arise contract, but the point is the notices, you know, the notice period should be very carefully coordinated with Lyft Arise to make sure that, you know, folks are all talking about that.
Okay. David, if I might just add a little bit more in terms of the outreach, because this is something that the board would be looking to the advisory committee for. In general, I think we're looking at sort of all the different options. We would be looking for who are the stakeholder groups, making presentations.
Yeah.
We'll be gearing up for that,
both
for the serving of customers for Palm Springs, but also to provide more information to Palm Desert and Cathedral City folks about DCE, what it's about, what it means to the local community. So we really see you all as ambassadors, and you know, we want you to be familiar, and whenever you have a question, let us know. But we do have plans also to, as we, in particular with regard to solar customers, one of the issues that we talked about before is what's called net energy metering, or some incentives that would be brought to solar customers. The board has not made a decision specifically about that. There is, of course, a cost to providing that benefit, but it's something we'll be talking to the DCE board about in the next few months, I think, about what the net energy metering program would look like and how do we encourage more solar, more rooftop, more locally generated resources, and hopefully brings more solar jobs to our community. So that's something that I think we'll be bringing to you at a point in the future, and it's something that would affect not just Palm Springs, of course, but the other communities involved in DCE. There's another aspect of that, which would be reaching out to the large commercial customers. They're going to be the most significant consumers, to make sure they understand, you know, what their options are. But we want to have you help us with groups like One Palm Springs for the city of Palm Springs, but who are the community groups that we want to reach out to in both cases, either because we're going to be starting in Palm Springs or because we want the community to know more about what DCE is in Cathedral City and Palm Desert.
Yeah.
You know, that's something definitely we want your ideas and suggestions about, what sort of outreach tools. We can provide workshops at City Hall, all kinds of different options.
Yeah.
We in the past, we've used a fair bit of social media, Facebook direct, you know, Facebook specific kinds of advertising that seems to have been effective. We'll be working with Burke Ricks and their expertise to
hone those, but I think also to kind of help us with the messages about what do you see as members of the community as the real advantages of this program, because you can communicate to your other community members about, you know,
It may be useful for those of us in Palm Springs to get together so that, Benjamin, you get one coordinated email. Is that okay?
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah. Is that Noel, if you can hear me on the phone there?
Yes.
Yeah, it may be useful so that we all, and I'll, you know, maybe speak with Patrick about that, but essentially for the five of us to get together and come up with one brainstorming. And once again, I think that the people that we should be contacted for CareFira are the same people that need to be contacted, and particularly with the likelihood or possibility that launch may be, you know, with the another couple of months, that needs to be done sooner rather than later. So
absolutely.
I would suggest, if that's okay with my fellow, you know, Palm Springs members, then I'll coordinate that.
In fact, this meeting tonight has been fabulous as a beginning education for all of us, I'm sure. And I would hope that Benjamin has been keeping track of all of his scripts, because I want to read them over again.
That's fine. And just also on the solar, because that was my next point, is that my understanding from our discussions back in June is that, yes, the net energy metering customers will be part of the initial Palm Springs launch, but the sort of the rates and any potential incentives have to be set by the board when it sets, you know, the rates for everything else. That is correct. Okay. And so that may be potential outreach to, you know, the folks who are doing most of the solar. Yeah. And there's one, you know, in Palm Springs to make sure that they're aware of that, et cetera.
And just as a point of information, we want this for the customers to be as seamless as possible. That for the most customers, they're going to still get the same Edison bill. Mm-hmm. They're still going to get all their services in terms of maintenance, et cetera, from Edison. So the rates that we would anticipate the board approving will be tied to Edison rates.
Okay.
We don't want all of a sudden everyone to go,
okay,
oh my gosh. No,
okay.
It'll be the same structure.
Okay.
Hopefully for the basic choice, that would be a at or below Edison rates. We're certainly going to be working very hard to make those rates competitive. But it'll be so the customers don't all of a sudden get, you know, a lot of different understanding. The rate structure would be tied to Edison rates, and those rates are finalized on the 1st of January.
Okay, and so depending on whether you're NEM 1 or NEM 2 with Edison, that would be carried over for solar customers
right into
DC.
And some good news, at least from our perspective, is that Edison has now decided that they're going to serve NEM customers on a monthly, make an adjustment on a monthly basis.
Oh, as opposed to a year.
Be an advantage to the NEM customer, so you basically keep your same. And we can get into that in more detail.
Yeah, sorry for the details of that.
Edison moved all net metering to a January to December time frame. It seems to me they have, only because I am and they moved me. So I was assuming they moved everyone.
So they changed your true-up months?
My true-up is now, it's now January through December.
Okay. Mine isn't.
We're going to have to sort of re-educate with Edison on that, but they did tell us a couple of weeks ago that they were willing to consider actually notifying on a month-by-month basis, which wouldn't change your true-up, and that was one of the challenges we had before.
And they're moving everyone to
time of use.
That's in the NEM proceedings.
And that's all part of this. They've got this huge billing upgrade and this time of use. All of these are factors that are influencing our schedule.
Any input that you have from your perspective?
Just the month-to-month NEM is not preferable for most customers.
Yeah.
And Edison, starting March of this year, Edison changed the solar compensation by eliminating grandfather time of use rates, meaning everybody had to be put on time of use rates that were less favorable. It incentivized the storage, but when they did that, everybody that had their system turned on from March on a lot of them continued to receive Edison bills as if they had no solar for 3, 4, even 5 months. And so it's been a huge headache for us in the industry because they're all calling us saying, you guys don't know what you're doing. And no, it's an Edison, it's a known Edison glitch. And they say that the customers are going to get credited back everything that they've paid. While we can't advise them to not pay their bill, you know, we tell them ask for an extension because you don't want to be paying if you're, you know, doing a loan to purchase your solar, you won't have to pay on the loan and pay Edison at the same time. And the other issue that comes up, at least for us, is most of our customers, we don't anticipate them having any Edison bill at the end of the year. So if they've been paying their bills, they're going to get this credit. It's going to take them 3 or 4 years to actually realize that credit. So month to month, you know, most solar customers would still prefer to have the annual billing. Obviously, you should get a statement every month and see where you're at along the road. But as far as the original net metering NEM 1 customers, I mean, that's a 20-year contract. Right. So they have to be grandfathered into that. Now, anybody that's NEM 2, which is July 1st, 2017 and beyond, theirs is only guaranteed for 5 years. So they're going to have to, you know, they'll be switched over. I get into Edison rates all day. But
I think what we plan to do is to bring solar industry folks in to help us with some of that conversation.
Thank you. Yeah, that particularly, no, that would be very important for your input, and I'm one of those lucky NEM 1 folks. Yes.
May I take us back to this?
Yeah, we're off topic.
Well, I mean, it is in terms of DCE launch because that part didn't happen.
Some of the issues.
Yeah, those issues were not dealt with before the attempted launch in 2018. Mm-hmm. So that's where it's important that we have this discussion.
Yeah. I don't want to stretch the meeting out, but in comments to the DCE board, I have indicated a concern about the lack of representation on the advisory council of various underrepresented communities. And the board said, why don't the advisory council figure something out? And one of the suggestions was to engage Lift to Rise to help us with that, but I'm not sure that that's the outreach that we're talking about, really, and I just want to make sure that we keep that question on the agenda for this group. How does this group get the input from the communities that I think we could say are not here, or generally are not here? That's my point. Thank you.
And maybe this was, as you know, Kim, a topic, and I think what we really want to do, we tried to get the word out as much as possible, encourage those applications. It's possible that not everybody would be interested in sitting on a community advisory committee, but we definitely want to work towards, and I think the Care Fair program will help that a lot, work on ways that we can bring those voices in. I mean, we talked about the importance of, you know, reaching out to all members of our community, and there may be other ways to involve those folks besides actually sitting on this group. And
you probably want to raise
an eye out for that.
Yeah, I would agree with what you're saying on representation. Maybe it just occurred to me that if either a delegate from Live to Rise or Hector could come and sit, not just for the portion of the meeting that he has, but maybe somebody, you know, could represent Lift to Rise during the whole course of the meeting, because they're going to pick up some weird, they're going to pick up the glitches, and they will have heard certain things that they might not choose to comment on, but in fact, they do dovetail with what we're doing.
Yeah, that's an excellent suggestion, and certainly those of us from Palm Springs were very much involved in the districting process and all the outreach. and sort of the CVRA working group was out there in the communities and having lots of workshops and listening, and I certainly am looking at that as a model for the Palm Springs launch. I don't want to speak for the other cities, but that was successful, and once again there was, you know, full language capabilities, and we would, you know, perhaps use the Lift Arise or perhaps resources in Palm Springs to help out on that. But that's certainly a way, Kim, that at least from Palm Springs, that we would be sort of out there in the community and working closely with Lift Arise as part of the launch process. But I love your suggestion of having Hector hear all of the meetings and sitting and providing input for what floats up through them. That is an excellent suggestion. I assume that's not, you know, a contract amendment or they can come upstairs.
You know what? I know he'd probably be more than willing to. I'm already going to include them on the agenda packets when they go out and stuff so that they'll be notified and know. And I'll try to get him to come.
Okay.
I mean, he and I are going to be partners in this the whole way through, so I don't think he would have a problem with, as long as it doesn't conflict with another meeting, but... I'm sure we can work it out.
Okay, but that is very much in terms of, you know, outreach to low-income customers, and Kim, to your point, a way of, at least from Palm Springs' perspective, how we can move forward that dialogue.
That's the end of the story.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. But that it's a good way, and once again, we're blessed with a good model of Palm Springs. All right, any more comments on the or questions?
I've got
on,
one.
Yeah, yeah.
One. We still have one vacancy for Cathedral City, and we would like to the board and Kim Floyd's suggestion to bring someone from the low income community, if we could. I thought there was someone that mentioned that they had a reverend or a pastor that
I was talking with Rick Saldivar, which a lot of people know. He's a pastor in Cathedral City. He's run for council out there. He was going to speak with the Cathedral City Council member that's on DCE.
John.
Yeah, he was going to talk to him about whether or not he wasn't sure that he believed in it. And I was trying to sell him on the idea, and I'll try again, because he would be excellent, because he is talking to, you know, hundreds if not thousands of people on a monthly basis.
And
he'd be a great,
perfect.
You know, he'd be perfect for this.
Yes, I agree.
I could contact Rick too.
That would be great. Thanks.
Yes.
So there is, yeah, that vacancy is an opportunity. Anybody who knows anybody might be interested.
Terry, I think we're hearing you. Okay.
Pardon?
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether you were making a comment there on the phone.
Yeah, I also talked to Rick last week, trying to get him to join us. And he was looking at it positively, but he was just weighing that and some other commitments.
Okay.
And then the question is, the DCE board may not meet until December, at least from what I've heard, so we'd have to wait until then to get the person. And that meeting is literally like right before Christmas, or is that potentially...
We can have them come to our next meeting.
Actually, at the last DCE board meeting, Sappy made the comment that we would need to bring each member back to the board.
Oh, yes, that's right,
We could do it not on an annual basis, maybe, or an annual...
Yeah, that's right. He did make that comment. Yes, thank you for reminding me. Yeah, saying that would happen.
I could potentially have the person attend the next meeting and then just make it a consent calendar kind of item.
For the next
meeting tentatively scheduled for the board is December 9th.
Yeah.
That's and that's just depending on availability of the members.
I have a question to move forward. As far as the outreach to DCE communities, are there any specific communities that are off limits? For example, mobile home parks that might be on a metered hookup, or are we also reaching out to businesses, high-consuming industrialized auto shops, that type of stuff, dealerships? Is this available to everybody in the community?
Yeah. There's a few. I mean, there are direct access customers, like some of the largest customers may be in what's called a direct access program, where they actually have they purchase electricity through some third party directly rather than from Edison. And we wouldn't be reaching out to the commercial side for direct access. So there's a small number of customers who
wouldn't be initially approached, but basically everybody who's on the Edison list would be eligible.
Okay, and once again, this is part of our outreach, but there should be probably some discussion to the cannabis community because the lights are on all the time for those grow facilities.
Yes.
And we're also talking about that in Palm Springs. I do have a question. Is the tribe for the casino a direct access customer in Palm Springs, as far as you know?
I believe most all of the tribal facilities, with the possible exception of their administration buildings, are direct access. I'm not sure about that, but...
That's what I thought, because we'll talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, some of the hospitals and large customers.
Yeah, the Desert Regional also would be.
I think Walmart, maybe. I'd have to check.
Okay. And because they're not a direct SCE customer, then they're not part of the rollout then.
Correct. It's a small, relatively small group.
Group of people, but with large energy consumption.
So they're employees.
But okay. All right. Any further questions on discussion action items? I think this has been very helpful then. Okay. All right. So now we're ready to move to public comments on non-agenda items. Yes.
Rosario Avila, Cathedral City. I would just like to bring to the attention of the advisory committee that your first meeting did not have public comments at all. I didn't attend it. This meeting does have public comments, but I would like to tell you the story of the board agenda structure. Since, I believe, 2017, the board agendas have been structured in a certain manner where if you want to comment on non-agenda items, you can do so at the beginning of the meeting. And after every item, you can do a public comment immediately after that item. Something has happened September 16th and then this last October board meeting. These are the first two meetings where the public comments have been changed forever. And I'm trying to reach out to CVAG. Ben has told me that I just have to wait for Tom Kirk to reply to me. I wanted to let you know this because I don't think I should have to wait for Tom Kirk to respond why this change was made. If you look at the board meeting now, it has the same structure as Palm Springs City Council meetings. If you want to speak on any item on the agenda, you have to do it at the very beginning. There was another gentleman at the October, the last meeting last week. He complained about the same thing, and I spoke up right after him. That's two individuals that are recognizing that the structure of the agenda has fundamentally changed. It's making it harder for me. I don't want to come to these meetings if my public comments on agenda items are jumbled at the beginning. And then if I want to speak on anything not on the agenda item, I have to wait to the end. I do not believe that's doing a service to the general public or yourselves. We should be keeping on a topic. I would like for the board to immediately change its agenda structure back to how it was. If you're going to make changes, you have to run that by the public. And CVAG did not do that. DCE did not do that. So that is very alarming to me. And I will stop coming. Like I said, I've been coming to these meetings since CVAC was exploring doing a tri-county CCA with San Bernardino, who said no, and Western Riverside County. So I have seen the goalpost move in over 2 years. They were advertising a 3 to 5 rate savings for the average person, and now today's presentations mention nothing about cost savings. Just so you know, the general public cares about their pocketbook. What are the savings to them? And those discussions aren't occurring. So just to keep that from in your perspective, line of perspective, that's where I'm coming from. Please, I will not attend another board meeting if the agenda is set up this way. If you can all please help address that for the very next agenda structure to return the way it was. If you're going to make changes, use the public process to do so. If you can all help me with that, this is very important. Thank you very much.
This is what the board has adopted, but is the community advisory committee free to...
It's the chair's decision.
Well, okay. I'm saying your agenda is now set up the way this change has been set up.
Another comment. This meeting is governed by the Brown Act,
Yes.
Yep.
And I'm in Dice Basin with Wayne.
Okay. All right. Benjamin, if I could speak to you, send you an email about that. I will just say that, as Mr. Baker knows, I was involved in the Ethics, Transparency, and Governmental Reform Task Force in Palm Springs, looked at what every city has done in the valley. Palm Springs has adopted something for Palm Springs that, at least based on the research 2 years ago, was not what other local agencies, other cities and local agencies were adopted. So to the extent that we're not bound by either what the board is doing or what Palm Springs is doing, I'd like to offer some suggestions, if I may, based on my research from other cities then. So I have, you know, been thinking about this issue, and if I can get back to you folks and we can, you know, perhaps have a little discussion on that.
Can you make that a future agenda item?
Yeah. I'd like to make a proposal on that, and we can take that back.
Okay.
So, yes. So, any further comment on non-agenda items? Okay, so we're next to announcements. So, next meeting, tentatively, November 21st. So, we'll continue with the third Thursday of each month at 5:30.
Yes.
I am not aware of any holidays that run into that.
Yep.
I haven't actually. When is Christmas? Is Christmas? Hopefully, we would meet. It would be the week before Christmas in December, I believe.
And Christmas, we can determine at each board meeting whether or not
Christmas is Wednesday. Enough.
Yeah,
Christmas on the Wednesday.
Okay, it would be the following week, so we'd be basically meeting 6 days before Christmas. Then, is that what it looks like?
19.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, 6 days before Christmas. Then, so. Sound like you continue. There's one meeting that I've already going to be out of town for, but Mr. Kaplan can serve as chair for that.
Okay.
All right. So if there are no further comments, then we can motion to adjourn. Motion to adjourn. Second. And as we say in Palm Springs, we vote with our feet.
Adjourn.
Okay. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Look forward to that. Thank you all.